ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರ ಬನಚಾರಿ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರ ಬನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಥ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಥ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಥ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ
Shripad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotara Sata Shishimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki, Iskon Fondara Charya Shila Prabhupada Ki, Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki, Itai Gaura Premanandi, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to Shishiguru and Shiguranga. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, entitled Liberation, Chapter 4, entitled Ambarish Maharaj Offended by Durvasa Muni. Text number 47. Tam apatanti jvalatim tan apatanti ಜ್ವಾಲಾತಿಂ ಅಶೀಹಸ್ತಂ ಪದಾಭುವಂ ವಿಪಜಾತಿಂ ಸಮಾದ್ವಿಕ್ಷಾ ನಚಾಚಾಲಾ ಪದಂ ನೃಪಃ ತನ್ ಆಪತಂತಿಂ ಜ್ವಲಾತಿಂ ಅಶೀಹಸ್ತಂ ಪದಾಭುವಂ ವಿಪಜಾಂತಿಂ ಮದ್ವಿಕ್ಷಾ ನ ಚಚಾಲ ಪದಂ ನೃಪಃ ತಂ ಆಪತಂತಿಂ ಜ್ವಾಲಾತಿಂ ಅಶೀಹಸ್ತಂ ಪದಾಭುವಂ ವಿಪಜಂತಿಂ ಸಮಾದ್ವಿಕ್ಷಾ ನ ಚಚಾಲಂ ಪದಾ ನೃಪಃ. Tam, that demon, apatantim, coming forward to attack him. Jolatim, blazing like fire. Asihastam, with a trident in his hand. Pada, with his footstep. Bhuvam, the surface of the earth. Vipayamtim, causing to tremble. Samudiksha, seeing him perfectly. Na, not. Chachala, move. Padat, from his place. Nripaha, the king. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Taking a trident in his hand and making the surface of the earth tremble with his footsteps, that blazing creature came before Maharaj Ambarish. But the king, upon seeing him, was not at all disturbed and did not move even slightly from his position. Purport. Narayana parasharve nakastachana bibhyati. Bhagavatam 6:17-28. A pure devotee of Narayana is never afraid of any material danger. There are many examples of devotees, such as Prahlad Maharaj, who was tortured by his father, but was not at all afraid, although he was only a five-year-old boy. Therefore, following the examples of Ambarish Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, a devotee should learn how to tolerate all such awkward positions in this world. Devotees are often tortured by non-devotees, yet the pure devotee, depending fully on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is never disturbed by such inimical activities. Tam apatantijwalatin ashihastam padabhubam bepayantin samudviksha nachachala padam nripaha. Taking a trident in his hand and making the surface of the earth tremble with his footstep, that blazing creature came before Maharaj Ambarish, but the king, upon seeing him, was not at all disturbed and did not move even slightly from his position. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishnapraseya Bhutale Shrimate Rupaswami Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishnapraseya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satarine Vancha Kalpatarubhya Shakri Pasindubhya Eva Chapatitanam Pavanevio Vaishnavevio Namo Namaha. So this is one of the how you say when a dramatic situation is rise to the, you know, to the height of the drama. How would you call that? What's the word? The climax. Yes. The climatic situation is coming from a situation, from the whole scene, is very amazing just to see the character and behavior of Maharaj Ambarish. And also, you know, we've been analyzing or being also being aware of the contrast between the great, powerful Muni Durvasa and Maharaj Ambarish, you know, a pure devotee of the Lord. And is not diminishing Durvasa Muni, but is such a stark contrast with the character of the devotee. Durvasa Muni is explained that right now, with his yogi powers, he created this powerful demon, the fire demon, that was ordered by Durvasa Muni to destroy Maharaj Ambarish. Now, we were not here during the, you know, sort of the narration, so it's quite something. How the contrast of character is highlighted. I'm trying to put my ideas. I beg your forgiveness because I'm in a little bit of a fog. I have this call, and last night we arrived super late. And yeah, I wish it was a jet lag, you know. But I still can appreciate this narration in the Bhagavatam. I mean, I'm thinking, here's Durvasa Muni. I mean, he's celebrated throughout the Vedic scriptures. He's a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And very, very powerful. And, you know, to the position of he is one of those living entities that is throughout almost different ages being present through different pastimes of the Lord. And specifically, you know, I mean, he gave blessings to Shrimati Radharani. I mean, who's to give blessings to Shrimati Radharani? But the pastime is that he also gave this blessings to Shrimati Radharani, that she will be able to cook anything that she will cook will be like nectar, which was a very nice thing that Shrimati Radharani used for connecting with Krishna. He's a very powerful personality. But when you actually contrast or compare his personality with the personality of such as Ambarish Maharaj, then it becomes, wow, this, what's the problem with this guy? Or what is the problem with, not which is this problem with this guy, what's the problem with Durvasa Muni? Why is he, because the contrast is quite something, because the position, so the point is the position of these unalloyed devotees of the Lord is like, is perfection. There's not a blemish, it's complete perfection. So it's highlighting that. Here's some of the translations. We go back, you know, so for the benefit of some of the devotees who were not here, including myself. We come to the point of Durvasa Muni coming to the palace and Maharaj Ambarish receiving. Maharaj Ambarish was fasting, performing this year-long jagya or sacrifice, fasting. And Durvasa Muni came the day that they were supposed to break the fast. He was supposed to break the fast. So And Maharaj Ambarish, you know, happily received Durvasa Muni, and then, you know, he was hoping to be able to serve Durvasa Muni before coming to the time that he had to break his fast, because the performance of this sacrifice is a Vedic sacrifice that have to be very exact. You have to be very exact with the mantras, you have to be very exact with the timing, with the location, everything. So there was an exact time to break the fast, a particular moment that was required for break the fast, for making the fast valid. I mean, we face that every time we fast in Ekadasi. There is a, you know, Jitendra Prabhu usually tells, you know, what is the time that you're supposed to break the fast in Dwadasi. If you don't break fast during that time, then it's explained that the fasting was not efficient, was not effective. So you have to break the fast during Dwadasi. So it came that time. But so Maharaj Ambarish was hoping to serve Durvasa Muni before that moment, but Durvasa Muni took a long time to take a bath in the Yamuna. So time was passing and passing and passing, and Durvasa Muni not showing up. He's, you know, taking this long bath. And it was so long that it came to the time of Maharaj Ambarish having to break. So what to do? So the king said, Maharaj Ambarish, to transgress the laws of respectful behavior towards the Brahmana is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of fast within the time of Dwadasi, there is flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, all Brahmanas, he's asking the Brahmanas of his kingdom, he have this difficulty. You know what to do? I cannot, you know, I promise to, you know, serve, and the etiquette is that you serve your guests, and before you even eat, you offer to your guests, especially when your guest is, you know, an elevated personality. You know, you don't either make yourself equal to the person that you're honoring by, okay, I sit down with you and we eat together like that, or you eat first and then, you know, it's almost like you're offering the remnants, you know, that was meant for you to your honor guest. So it's a complete breach of etiquette. So the proper etiquette that it was, you know, for civilized Vedic people, was the honorable or the honored guest should be first served before one even, you know, partake of any of anything. So Durvasa Muni is not showing up. He have to he have to serve him. But at the same time, he have to break fast, because now was that time of Dwadasi. So what to do? So he asked the Brahmanas, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I should break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting with the Brahmanas, the king reached this decision. For according to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. So you find one of those loops in the laws that, you know, it could be this way or it could be that way. So to be able to be fit to fulfill those two sort of conflicting duties. O best of the Kuru dynasty, after he drank some water, King Ambarish, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the heart, waiting for the return of the great mystic Durvasa Muni. So Maharaj Ambarish's heart was perfect. And Maharaj Ambarish's consciousness was fully connected to the personality of Godhead. And so there is absolutely no flaw. It's actually, you can simply appreciate the beauty of, you know, such a pure heart and thoughtful and perfectly, you know, perfect in all sense. Now, here's Durvasa Muni's perception of that act of Maharaj Ambarish. After executing the ritualistic ceremonies to be performed at noon, Durvasa returned from the bank of the Yamuna. The king received him well, offering all respects, but Durvasa Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that King Ambarish had drunk water without his permission. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembled, his face curved, and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Ambarish, who stood with him before him with folded hands. "Alas, you see the behavior of this cruel man, who is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself God. Just see, he has transgressed the laws of religion. Maharaj Ambarish, you invite me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I show you something to punish you." And then he created this monster, this huge demon, to kill Maharaj Ambarish. So Durvasa Muni, he had the mystic power to understand that an action was that happened. He had the mystic power to understand, oh, although he was not there, he drank water. He broke the fast. He ate. He didn't see, you know, it's almost the law, the universal law, the laws of Dharma says, like the Brahman has confirmed, that it could be seen as not breaking fast or eating. So the two possibilities are there. But Durvasa Muni, although powerful to see to see what has happened, that he drank water, the way he saw was, okay, this power, he ate, and therefore he made a big offense. He transgressed the laws of you know, proper behavior for honoring a guest. And which, thinking about it, is almost like, come on, how could, you know, even if he transgressed, such a small transgression. You know by your mystic powers that he didn't have a feast, he didn't eat a samosa or something like that, or a cake. You know, he took a little bit of water, you know, like a hand, you know, like a little drop of water to break the fast. So the punishment that Durvasa Muni was applying to Maharaj Ambarish for that tiny transgression was like overblown. Is not, it doesn't fit the reaction that he had. So it was almost like, it was almost when you have the situation of someone looking for, it's just having like a gripe against someone. So you just look for a single reason to just come down you know, just download some negative emotion on this person. You just find the littlest excuse. And then you see, aha, this is what's happening. You know, you blah blah. I mean, what Durvasa Muni says here, cruel, he actually called him, he was cruel. I mean, when we hear the narration, it's like this such gentle, thoughtful, beautiful personality. Here's something, you know, that he was doing where, you know, as he received Durvasa Muni, he was, you know, he received all kinds of paraphernalia and, you know, gifts and things like that, very generously. And then not only that, you know, when it comes to the time of breaking the fast and he have all these brahmanas, you know, he satisfied all the brahmanas who that were there, gave them 60 crores. What's a crore? It's like 100,000 or something. What is a crore? 10? 10 million. 10 million. Okay, so he gave 60 crores of cows whose horns were covered with gold plate and whose hooves were covered with silver plate to the brahmanas. So generous, so, you know, charitable, you know, just like a perfect personality. And then just because of that, he calls him cruel. He's cruel. And then he calls, he's not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. So talking about, you know, fault finding, and he says that Maharaj Ambarish was actually thinking that he was God himself. That's why he acted like that. That's why he drank this drop of water. He think he's God. He think he's, you know, is over religious principles. He can do whatever he wants. So this is the way he saw. And downloaded this huge amount of anger that became, you know, this monster, this huge fiery demon meant to kill Maharaj, destroy Maharaj Ambarish. So, in general, I mean, I'm not in a position of even, I mean, it's not, I feel it's not right from a position like myself to analyze a Vedic personality from my experience, my realm of experience, such as Durvasa Muni. Obviously, you know, these are personalities that are part of the Bhagavatam and the Vedic scriptures. These are highly elevated personalities. However, one thing that is clear is the contrast that is there with the devotee of the Lord. Obviously, Durvasa Muni didn't have that connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Maharaj Ambarish. There's something in Durvasa Muni that is not fully connected, and therefore is almost victimized by this quality of anger that clouded, you know, his powerful vision that he have, the mystic vision that he has to understand things. So, and there was something that my spiritual master was spoken during the saying yes to Krishna retreat in Gitanagari, that When one is not in that type of connection with Krishna, then that is a position of fear. Fear. Sorry? Yes. Abhayam. Abhayam means fear. And so he was explaining that, you know, this is a very, is at the base of a material existence, fear. And so from fear, all these other emotions, you know, sort of come out. And we can understand that, you know, there is something in Durvasa Muni that was not fully connected. It was not fully connected. And then as we hear the narration, we're gonna come to that, you know, position when Durvasa Muni eventually, as a last resource, and with his powerful mystic capacity, he was able to enter Vaikuntha and come in front of Lord Vishnu. You know, the darshan of Lord Vishnu, to ask him for protection. And Lord Vishnu say, I can't give you protection. So, dismiss him. But Lord Vishnu told him, if you want protection, you go to the lotus feet of Ambarish Maharaj. So, a very important lesson. So, Durvasa Muni didn't have that connection with the personality of Godhead, but as an elevated personality, he was directed to take shelter of the lotus feet of the devotee of the personality of Godhead, to be able to achieve that shelter, to be able to be protected and free from fear. So the character that, you know, with all that display of power, with all that display of, you know, emotions, negative emotions and anger and misjudgment you know, having this gross misperception of such a great personality like that Ambarish Maharaj, behind all that was fear. And then we're going to see that when Durvasa Muni is faced with the destruction, his death by the Sudarshan Chakra. He was afraid. He was very afraid and was going all over the universe. This powerful personality who was feared by all. I mean, every time in the narrations, when Durvasa Muni will arrive to some place, everybody will be all very anxious, because this he gets angry, and he was gets angry, that's the end of it. So this personality that everybody fear, he was running all over the universe begging for help to be safe, afraid. So fear fear at the end of everything. You know, it was the base quality that was, you know, that is there highlighted. And then it's Maharaj Ambarish, who was completely the opposite. He was fearless to the point that he sees this huge fiery demon coming towards himself with a trident meant for his destruction, and he was not disturbed, to the point that, I mean, Maharaj Ambarish, when he was in front, the description is, he's standing in front of Durvasa Muni with folded hands in a humble position, you know, just accepting whatever judgment or misjudgment in this case was given by Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni just abusing him by words, completely unjust. And he's still in a humble, just standing and taking it, not protesting. There is no narration of Maharaj Shambharis retaliating or even saying, no, please don't think like that. Actually, according to the laws of Dharma, he was just taking it. And then, in his anger, after abusing him with words, he creates a demon to destroy him. And in this huge fire, demon comes towards him. And it's not just, he was going to throw the thing. The thing, you start to run towards him. And as the steps, boom, 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 the earth is trembling. So when can you imagine? I mean, just to think about it, I'm freaking out. You just imagine, Godzilla coming towards you or something like that, or King Kong or some one of those monsters that, one grows as a child, I've seen in movies or something like that, just advancing towards you, whatever, the T-Rex or something, boom, 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 the earth trembling as this huge demon. And the verse says that he's seeing him with clarity. It's not that he was like, oh, what's happening? No, he's seeing with clarity what's happening, Maharaj Shambharis. And he remains in the same position with folded hands, completely undisturbed, and doesn't even go like, move. No, there's not even a movement, a slight movement. So, the position of fearlessness is like highlighted to the most, to the top. Like, there was no preparation for what was coming. And it was just in front of him. We were in the same room, And then you have this, all of a sudden, poof, and coming towards you. And he doesn't even get startled or, like that. Nothing. He's just standing there. So it's a position of extreme fearlessness. And that's the position that one achieves with pure devotion. Because one comes to understand that Krishna's protection is there, regardless. Rupa Swami spoke yesterday, the other day, of this this character of the devotee that sees reversals, any type of reversal, with with the mood that it's just Krishna's mercy. So it's completely undisturbed by either a favorable situation or a favorable circumstance, or something that is a complete reversal, a negative thing. So he is equipoise, and he's always in the position of whatever it is, it's all fine because Krishna is in control, because he trusts Krishna's protection. So the devotee is not anxious about that. He's always confident of Krishna's protection. So whatever it is, if he have to die, he dies. If he have to be punished, he's punished. Whatever Krishna sends, whatever circumstance Krishna sends to this, to the unalloyed devotee is completely equipoised, undisturbed. He's always equal. It's all Krishna's mercy, and Krishna's protection is there. So he's confident of Krishna's protection. If Krishna wants to take me, Krishna will take me. If Krishna doesn't want to take me, nothing, you know, that, if someone wants to kill you, no one can, if God wants to kill you, no one can kill you. No one can save you. And if God wants to save you, no one can kill you. What is the Bengali thing? Raka Krishna Mare, say it again. Mare Krishna Raka ke? Raka Krishna Mak, Raka Krishna Mare ke? Mare Krishna Raka ke? So the devotee have no anxiety. It's completely fearless. So the retreat was about to get to that position is when one can, with a full heart, say yes to Krishna. Say yes to Krishna in terms of, you know, yeah, Krishna, I'm yours. And then Krishna affords, you know, all his protection like that. So according to the degree that we say yes, you know, if it's 40% yes and 60% no, not that, then you got 40% protection and freedom from fear, and 60% you have to be afraid. Material life means, one of the qualities of material life, of material condition, is fear. It's abhayam. That's why, you know, these four activities of a material body, of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, is abhayam, which is mean to fear. So, it's build material consciousness. So as long as we connection to this material consciousness, we be affected by fear. And from fear, so many other emotions, you know, comes: envy, pride, anger. It's actually, you know, connecting to fear. So the bottom line is that we learn from this beautiful narration is that the position of being like a Maharaja Ambarish with all his senses and his mind fully devoted to the personality of Godhead, then we can be free of all anxieties and fear. And without that, then even powerful personalities like Durvasa Muni, at the bottom, there is it becomes exposed that you're just afraid of the fear is there. The fear of losing yourself. and at the end of the narration is the place in which you take shelter to reach that position of fearlessness under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is taking shelter of the lotus feet of a devotee such as Ambarish Maharaj. Anyway, I stop here. Sorry for a choppy side of class, but any comment or discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. You made a lot of wonderful, nice points, so don't be discouraged. And so forgive me for not organizing my thoughts, and first of all, welcome back, devotees. My comment, and maybe you could expand on it, you were mentioning fear of becoming fearlessness and some other points you made. I'm not sure if I'll organize them, but you also mentioned religious principles. So that reminded me of, because I'm a writer, so that reminded me of one subject matter, one couple of my notes. And I'll kind of apply this to this pastime. In this pastime, Durvasa Muni was devoted to being a principal, whereas Ambarish Maharaj was devoted to having principles. And the reason I appreciate that is because nobody generally prays for principles, because in the material world, we want to be right. We want to be the principal, the supreme, right? But we can see when there's disagreements like Ambarish Maharaj, even if we're proven to be right in our arguments, because we haven't prayed for principles, then we're always disturbed when we associate with people we don't like. So you may be right, but what is the use of it if you have no peace of mind, if you have to associate with people you don't like? Always disturbed. So that's one point I appreciate about this pastime. And maybe you could expand on one of the main principles that I appreciate of how devotees are able to tolerate storms in their life. Is that the main principle we can see in Srila Prabhupada's life is that the main principle is to become a well-wisher of everyone, you know, in all circumstances. And this is explained, I mentioned this to Acharya Nishan, maybe you could expand on this point. This is my last point. It's mentioned in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. The chapter is called The Supreme Character of Jadabharta. It was that pastime where the dacoits tried to sacrifice them, and Mother Kali burst from her deity form and saved them and executed the dacoits. And in the last verse of that chapter, I really appreciate it. It says that one who is a well-wisher of everyone and doesn't contemplate harming anyone is always protected by the Lord's Sudarshan Chakra. So we can see in the Prabhupada's life, that's the main principle, is to be a well-wisher of everyone. And that's up to each and every individual. So my question is that it's kind of like an answer within a question. Is it the reason why we can't tolerate minor things, like this is a minor circumstances that Durvasa Muni found fault with them, is the reason we can't topple is because we're not their well-wishers. So that's kind of the answer within a question. We're not, that's up to each and every individual, basically.
Well, we're trying to be thoughtful and serving others. We all trying, you know, devotees, aspiring devotees, we all trying. However, there was one thing that His Holiness Ramapa Swami brought up that I thought was very touching and very deep in terms of dealing with you know, with others, that we have to have a sense of the well-wishing power manifests. I'm trying to put my ideas together. It came, but you know, all of a sudden vanished. It was okay. Let me go back, and it was from a question of one young girl that was explaining of people how she's going to deal with people who mistreat her, you know, in some form or another, you know, situations that actually hurt you, you know. Because we're not in the position of an Ambarish Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj. You know, we still have mix. So we have what is called a Prakrita Bhakta, which most of us are in that boat. We have a mix of devotion and materialism. Materialistic devotee, Prakrita Bhakta means materialistic devotee. So there is this mix. So there is a higher nature and a lower nature that is sort of present in us. And the idea is that we become more and more equipped to don't allow the lower nature to rule or to force us to act in some way. So we become trained and we become more adept by the process of sadhana, bhakti, purification, chanting the holy name, serving the devotees, etc., etc., to be able to function on our higher nature and minimize, you know, the lower nature. So what Ramapa Swami explains to this young girl how to deal with that is that you have to try to use tools to not react to circumstances, you know, that are being inflicted by others towards yourself, not react in such a way that allow your lower nature to function. For example, if someone insults you, I mean, you bring this a lot, you know, in terms of things, someone insults you or someone disregards you. So, so then, you know, our lower nature is, oh yeah, Ramapa Swami is fun, you know, he goes like, oh yeah, let me show you who I, you know, like that, he goes like that, you know, so I'm going to show you, I'm going to put you in your position, you know, I'm going to retaliate, right, just, you know, you bring that out, you know, I'm going to retaliate. So that is a reaction from our lower nature. And then Ramapa Swami explains that, you know, this is from Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. He quoted Bhaktitirtha Maharaj saying that when that's there, you're not actually, he quoted Bhaktitirtha Maharaj quoting Srila Prabhupada. That when we allow to our lower nature to react towards some negativity that has been throw at us by someone else, then we're not better than them. We're in the same equal level. And Ramapa Swami quoted Bhaktitirtha Maharaj revealing or expressing to Srila Prabhupada, you know, that he was exposed within ISKCON to racist, you know, behavior towards him, because he was a black body person, African American, and although he was highly materially qualified, valedictorian in Princeton University, you know, a social leader, you know, I mean, he was this highly intellectually qualified materially person, and then, you know, he was being treated like, you know, oh, psh, like disregarded, you know, and with a racial sort of like connotation. And then he brought that to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I'm experiencing racism within ISKCON. And then Prabhupada said, if you become affected by that, if that's disturbing you, you're not better than them. You're not better than them. So Ramapa Swami was telling this girl that we have to, you know, then switch. That rather to react with our lower nature, we're trying to react with, you know, our higher nature. And our higher nature is, how can I react in such a way that is pleasing to Krishna? He was saying this. I thought that was, you know, it's so important for us. How can I react in such a way, or how can I act and respond in such a way that is pleasing to Krishna and that is beneficial for this person and beneficial for me? That thought comes, and he says, even if you have no clue how to act in such a way, just to ask the question, just to bring that question, oh my dear Lord, how can I act in such a way in these circumstances that can be pleasing to you. Just to think like that, even if you have no idea how to act in such a way, Rupa Swami say you will be protected. You will be protected from your lower nature. I thought that was tremendous. And so that's a very important lesson that applies to this.
I just quote, I appreciate that pastime with Bhakti Tirtha Swami, so I just want to reiterate that quote because I watched it a few times where Prabhupada mentioned. He says something also to the extent, it's kind of, Prabhupada said, it's funny because Prabhupada said, if they're mistreating you because they think you're the body, then you're nonsense. Then they're nonsense. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami is like, yes, I knew they were nonsense. But then Prabhupada also said, and if you're being disturbed by it because they're mistreating you, that means you're nonsense because you also think you're the body.
Yes.
So I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Just one more question. We're past time. If you have anything, no, we can end here. Madhava Goranga Prabhu.
My question is about fearlessness. During the retreat, Rupa Swami was talking about our dear friend, the mind. And there's often time in my practice of Krishna consciousness, I'm afraid of my mind because I know how badly it'll beat me up. But then on the other side, sometimes I may be afraid of purification because sometimes purification is either nice and smooth and sometimes purification is very gross and full. So either way, sometimes it looks like, you know, it's you're going to get a slap in the face or something. You know, either way, I'm wondering how can. You were touching on it a little about it, but how can you be fearless? Process of purification.
I think that was built in the whole. That was the whole message of saying just. Going into that practice of, you know, even if we have no clue what it means to say, you know, yes, I mean, well, I want to say, okay, let me retract that. There's certain things that we know that, you know, is that Krishna is asking us through, you know, the disciplic succession or through Krishna directly, you know, in his teachings, in the scriptures. And we, you know, get into the practice of saying, yes, there are certain things that we can understand that is saying no to Krishna. Like, for example, you know, there are certain things that we're attached that we're not, you know, then you know that is something that is that you're making a choice. You know, I actually taking shelter of my material attachment instead of taking shelter of Krishna. So there's those points of choosing, you know, either this or that or Krishna. So as long as fear means that we say no to Krishna in some way. So if there's certain anxiety, there's certain instability, there's conflict, all the things that we experience is just telling us, you know, that there's something that we're saying no. So what do we do? Well, we're trying to find that we're saying no, and then trying to say yes. I mean, just that being introspective will lead us to clarity of what is that we're saying no. I mean, Durvasa Muni had no clue that he was so afraid until Sudarshan Chakra showed up. I mean, he thought, you know, he was the one who was punishing everybody, you know, and who everybody have to. So talking about playing God, you know, And he's projecting that into Maharaj Shambharish. So things become revealed, I think. we have to, it all lies down in that, being able to sort of accept and embrace and say yes to what Krishna, Guru and Krishna is leading us towards, and live our life like that. And this type of conflicts and things is it means that things are working, because, you know, if we feel unease and, you know, that I'm not feeling stable, means okay, something is working. Because if I don't feel that, if I feel comfortable, because some people, you know, they feel comfortable with the status quo. There's no instability. I mean, you see some materialistic people, they're pretty, you know, until he become exposed. I mean, Durvasa Muni was pretty settled. There was no, like, would I make a mistake if, you know, type of thing. So, so we take it like that. It's part of the purification process. We have to find out, we have to understand, if there is conflict, means that our Krishna, we're not applying the Krishna consciousness there. So then we find out. Okay? Thank you. Okay. Karantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.